Are you a caregiver? It's estimated that 65 million people in the U.S. are caregivers, and our guest this hour is among them. And she has written a guide about how caregivers can care for others and for themselves. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 20th. Jan Heller is a novelist and author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, a caregiver's survival guide to keeping you in good health and good spirits. And we will welcome your questions for her and we'll welcome your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jane Heller joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So where did this come from? You'd better not die or I'll kill you.
Some title, right?
Yeah.
It is literally what I say to my husband, Michael, before he goes into surgery. You know, how they wheel you on the gurney to those scary-looking double doors in the operating room. And, you know, the nurse says, this is where you'll have to say your goodbyes. And I lean down to my husband, and I wag my finger, and I say, you better not die or I'll kill you. And he smiles, and off he goes. And I thought, you know, better for him to see me with a smile on my face than standing there, you know, hand-wringing, worrying.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of the tone of the book, that I really wanted to convey a sense of uplift and cheerfulness where it was appropriate.
Now tell us about your situation and your husband's condition.
Michael has something called Crohn's disease, which is a chronic autoimmune disease of the digestive system. So he was diagnosed at about age 11 and has had, about 100 hospitalizations and maybe 30 surgeries. It's not a fun illness, but like many chronic illnesses, it has its emergencies and then its remissions. So it's kind of a roller coaster.
Yeah. And you actually had some experience with this, at least your mother did.
Well, yeah, that was the ironic part. I grew up with a mother who nursed two sick husbands. My father died of brain cancer when I was six, and my stepfather died of complications from epilepsy. And I really had the conscious thought, this is not for me. I want to find a man without a medical flaw. Ha ha, mm-hmm. You know. We love whom we love. And when I met Michael, he was in remission. He was not showing any signs of illness, and he was very vigorous and a sailor. And I thought, hey, you know, I found a live one here. And we got married, and shortly thereafter, or maybe it was just before, we had our first trip to the emergency room, and I thought, okay, this will be your life, and those words, in sickness and in health, do matter. So I think a lot of us go down the aisle, and we just don't pay a lot of attention to that.
Yeah, and you're not alone, that you have a lot of company. 65 million people are in some sort of caregiving role.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, when you think about it, these are unpaid workers, and we do it because we love our loved one. But for many, and there's so many ways to be a caregiver. You can have a child with an illness or disability. You can have a spouse or an elderly parent or grandparent or even a neighbor or friend. And there are some cases where the illness is chronic, and there is no beginning, middle, and end. And there are some where the situation is critical, so you really you're on high alert 24/7. I can't think of anyone I know who hasn't been touched by the caregiving experience in some way.
Yeah. And why do you think caregivers need a survival guide?
Well, because we don't care for ourselves. For one. You know, when you go in an airplane, the flight attendant says, if the oxygen mask drops down, put it on your face first and then over your child's afterwards. We don't do that. And if we don't take care of ourselves, who is going to take care of our loved one? The statistics are staggering about how many caregivers die before their caregivees. So this is, you know, not just a cliche. This is something that's urgently important.
Yeah, caregivers don't have time to take care of themselves.
Well, that's not quite true. That's what I used to think. And so I neglected my own health because I thought, well, you know, my husband, Michael, was in the hospital four times in 2010. And I remember thinking, I don't know that I took a deep breath for that entire year. I'm sure I did, but it didn't feel that way. And I would sit rigidly in that chair in the hospital room, afraid to get up and walk around because I'd miss something, afraid to go eat something in the cafeteria. And I'd stay late, and then I'd go home, grab some takeout on the way home, eat it standing up at the kitchen counter in about 5 minutes, and then go to the computer and start trying to work until late, and then not be able to sleep, and on and on and on. It would cycle. And so when I had a doctor's appointment, I would say, well, I don't have time. I don't have time to cook a meal. I don't have time to get my hair cut. I mean, little things, but they add up, and it's not a good result.
Yeah. Did you fall ill?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, I had a lot of skin cancers that I neglected to deal with, and so they became more of a problem because I didn't take care of them right away. I ended up having to have surgery because I didn't take care of a matter. And so, you know, there really are consequences. And I think most apparent are the stress-related illnesses that people get, inflammations, headaches, stomach problems. You know, they just sort of say, oh, I'm anxious or I'm a little depressed, so I'm not going to pay attention. Caregivers need to also to get professional help if they need it. I have a chapter called When to See a Shrink. And, you know, this book isn't just my voice, by the way. I interview other caregivers, some well-known, some not, some dealing with a spouse or child, some dealing with an aging parent. But what's so interesting is that while the specifics may be so different, we all share the same emotions, the same pitfalls. It was quite interesting to know that.
But caregivers also, I don't know if I speak a little bit from personal experience here, don't always ask for help when they should or when people would love to help too.
I didn't. I was raised to believe that, you know, one kept things to oneself, especially if they were unpleasant. So otherwise it would sort of smack of complaining, and that's not something you did, stiff upper lip and all of that. So I didn't reach out necessarily. I didn't ask a friend to come and sit with me in the waiting room many times. I didn't want to be a bother. But then I realized that people do want to help. Now, that said, I have a chapter about friends and how friendships can slip away when there's a persistent medical problem in the family, and that's due to many things. It's because people may not know what to say to you. People may feel awkward. You know, they may say the wrong thing, like, you know, hang in there, or let me tell you about my mother who had cancer in Wisconsin. Or they may do something called stiff-arming where, you know, they kind of keep you at a distance because they don't really want your life. They're afraid it may become their life. There are some harsh aspects to this, but by and large, you know, we have to treasure those people who are there for us and be there equally for them when they need help. So now I do let my core group of friends know when I need them.
Well, following up on that, while this is a survival guide for the caregiver, do you have some advice for the friends of the caregiver? What can we do that would be most helpful?
You know, one of the things that was suggested by one of the other caregivers, she's a woman who has a son on the autism spectrum, and she said, you know, people say, oh, you know, we must get together and then don't follow up, or I'd love to help you, but then that's where it ends. So maybe suggest, do you need a run to get some groceries? Do you need me to sit with the person for an hour so that you can run out and do what you need to do? You know, things like that that are very practical and common sense would be much appreciated.
And if,
or barring that, yeah. Just I'm thinking of you. You don't really have to say anything more than I want you to know that I'm thinking of you.
Yeah. And the caregiver should not have any qualms at all about, to a good friend especially, hey, can you go to the grocery store for me?
If it's a really good friend, and the opposite of that is don't go around with your woe is me story. Nobody wants to hear that. So don't dump all your pain on one friend. That's not fair either.
Yeah.
You know, just be judicious in that.
Speaking of woe is me, you really do approach this with a great sense of humor. You the title of your book, you'd better not tire her, I'll kill you, is an example of that. Why did you think it was important to approach this topic in that way?
Well, you know, there really are a lot of good, solid caregiver books on the market, and they're very resourceful and give people resources. But I wanted to do something different. I really, in my novels, which are romantic comedies, I had gotten so much mail from people who said, you know, your books helped me escape. Your books lifted me up when I was going through a bad time. They made me laugh. And I thought, well, I can do the same thing here. I wanted to be the cheerful companion that I wish I'd had when I was sitting in the hospital waiting for Michael to come out of surgery. I didn't want to be a downer. Not that I wanted to be jokey or dismissive or trivialize this in any way. I just wanted to give people a moment to say, you know what, we need humor in order to stay sane, in order to stay balanced. So, for instance, when I interviewed an ER doctor, you know, she told me how doctors use black humor and gallows humor to get through what they have to deal with in a given day. Very important.
We are talking with Jane Heller. She is a novelist. She is the author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits. And we're wondering how, if you are a caregiver, you keep yourself in good spirits and in good health. Maybe you have some advice you can share with us, or maybe you have questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you a caregiver? What types of things do you do to make sure you stay healthy and happy? How do you make time for yourself? And at the same time, how do you make sure you're getting the best care for your loved one? We'll talk more about that as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's a look back at the big headlines of this week. It's our regular Friday Week in Review. We'll have two guests from different viewpoints talking with you about the top news stories of the week. And one of the news stories, of course, will be today's major winter storm and blizzard. Hopefully all will be well, and it'll be a distant memory tomorrow morning. Blizzard warnings are in effect for most of southern Wisconsin and central and northeastern. There's a swath going up from the southwestern portion of the state through northeastern Wisconsin under a blizzard warning. Up to a foot or more of snow, blowing and drifting snow, is expected tomorrow, turning sunny with highs in the 20s and low 30s. We are talking about caregiving and how caregivers should take care of themselves. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest, who is a caregiver, and she is the author of A Survival Guide for Caregivers. Her book is You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits. And we have an open line for you if you want to talk about your situation and how you find time for yourself. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Or maybe you have an experience that you'd like to run by our guest, and maybe she'll have some advice. You know, I know that you also deal with not just taking care of oneself or keeping in good spirits and good health for the caregiver, Jane Heller, but about making sure you're getting the best care for your charge or your loved one. And one of the most frustrating aspects of caregiving sometimes can be with dealing with how can I put this? Cranky hospital personnel. You tell the story about, for instance, the crotchety nurse you dealt with once when your husband was in the hospital. Why don't you tell us that story?
Well, yeah. See, Big Linda, we called her. Big Linda was very grumpy, and I was determined to win her over because I thought that, you know, as a caregiver, you are the patient's advocate, and I wanted to be sure that Michael had the best care. And so I have a friend who bakes little chocolate cakes for people every Christmas, and they seem to like it. So when I couldn't get a rise out of Big Linda, I thought I'm going to go home and bake her a chocolate cake, and I did, and brought it in. And the next thing I knew, you know, she said, her response was, "Does it have nuts in it?" And I thought, oh, you know, great, it's not working. And then the next thing I knew, she came in with this beautiful chair and replaced the uncomfortable visitor's chair with this throne and said, "Here, sit here, you'll be more comfortable." And then brusquely walked out. And I thought, well, okay, chocolate works.
Yeah, you got to her.
I did. But my advice on that score is to, you know, we often will encounter medical personnel who may not be gifted socially, and that doesn't always mean they're not giving your loved one good care. But in the case of doctors, for example, they do what I call hit and runs. You know, we love doctors, we need doctors, we can't live without them. But some of them are the type that, you know, will come into a room and say, "Hi, looks great, gotta go." And you can't even ask a question. And so I urge people to write down your list of questions beforehand so you don't waste anyone's time, probably no more than 3 or 4. Or you can say to the doctor, if this isn't a good time, could we make an appointment for another time later in the day? And usually they will. But I developed another trick of the trade, which is what I call box the doc. If you've got a guy who comes in, or a woman who comes in and doesn't give you enough time, you stealthily move toward the door and plant your feet in the threshold, and you trap the doctor in the room. And that doctor will not barrel you over to get out of the room, I promise. So I encourage boxing the doc.
I like that. That's sort of like pulling a Shirley MacLaine, isn't it?
I have one of those too. You know, it's there are times when you want to be polite. You really want to start without raising your voice and just, you know, state your concern or your complaint calmly, because that's how you will get heard. But there are times when Michael, for instance, was cold, and he called me and said, I can't get them to give me a blanket. For some reason, that just broke me. And I drove to the car with smoke coming out of my ears, you know, and I got there and I said, "My husband needs a blanket." and sure enough, he got a blanket and he got, you know, new pillows and he got lots of things. But sometimes they just are too busy, and that's understandable, you know. So another chapter is about why there's gridlock in the ER, for example, and we get so irritated when we have to wait, and why is there gridlock? And knowledge is power. If you know what's going on in the health system, mm-hmm. and the medical system, you really do have a better understanding, so you'll understand why there's a wait. You'll understand why doctors have less time now than they ever did before. They're overloaded.
Yeah, and you also had some tips on how to deal with, for instance, nurses. Let's say, you know, you want that blanket, and a nurse gets the blanket, and then you want this, and then you want that, and then you want something else that perhaps having those multiple requests at one time would be better than every 10 minutes.
That's exactly right. And I interviewed a nurse in the critical care unit of our hospital here in California, and she said, you know, it sounds very simple, but if we're coming in and you say your dad would like some cranberry juice, we'll go to the pantry and then we'll come back, and then you'll say, you know, he really could use some butter. And then this nurse goes to the pantry and brings the butter. And the nurse said to me, do us a favor, caregivers. If you've got, you know, make a list. If we're going to the pantry, tell us everything you need. Because if we have to make several trips, we're not going to be very happy with you. And you're not going to get the care you want. It's that simple.
We are talking about getting the care you want for a loved one, especially if you are a caregiver, and how to take care of yourself as well. We are talking with the author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits, Jane Heller. 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to ask a question, if you'd like to share an experience as a caregiver, perhaps, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How do you make sure that you take good care of yourself? And how do you try to take the best care of your loved one? Norma in Waukesha is with us. Hello, Norma.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I am not now a caregiver, but I was the caregiver of my husband who had Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for almost 10 years. And mm-hmm. one thing I have not heard at this point on the program is a support group. A support group is needed in any case, as far as I'm concerned, because that's what the lady was saying. Your friends drop away. You don't want to depend on the family too much, so you end up doing, excuse me, a lot of caregiving yourself. But I also found out with the length, of course, of Alzheimer's, I had to have some rest periods myself, and I was able to put him in a caregiving place for a week at a time occasionally, so I could get away from all of this. And it worked very well. But I do want to stress a group that you can talk with about some of your concerns.
That's a great suggestion. I'm glad you brought it up, Norma. What about support groups, Jane?
I have a chapter called Finding a Shoulder or Ten to Lean On. And I'm so glad that caller reminded me to talk about support groups. For a long time, I didn't believe in them. As I said, my mother always raised us to believe that you kept your unpleasantness to yourself. And then I discovered there's such value in support groups. As she said, the caller, we can't dump it all on a friend or family members. We need to connect with others who are going through the same things or similar than that we are. But it's not just enough to share, listen to what happened to me, stories. While that's important, it's also important to, take those unburdenings and then go back into the trenches with a sense of resilience. And, you know, yes, we're all in this. We all got through it. But now we have to go back. And what have we learned, if anything? I think others who are going through, say, Alzheimer's or any chronic illness have so much to share, so much wisdom. So we not only get to connect with other people and to break out of the isolation that many of us feel, but we learn things. We learn strategies. We learn ways for coping. So very, very important. And, you know, even just talking to the other, say, 15 or 20 caregivers that I interviewed in the book was helpful to me. So I urge people to find support groups. They're everywhere. They're very easy now. Even online, there's a site called caregivers.org. There's AARP. Many, many sites where you can connect online if you can't physically get out and go.
Yeah, thank you so much, Norma. What I was interested in this, that she said she was able to have her husband hospitalized for maybe even a week at a time as respite, it sounded like.
Well, you know, I don't know her specific situation.
Well, maybe we should just talk about the need for some, you know, for some kind of respite care for the caregiver.
Respite is very important. There are so many ways that if we can't afford to have home health care, sometimes insurance will pay, sometimes not, and our loved one is living at home, or even if our loved one is not living at home, or living in some kind of a facility, we still need respite care. We still need to get out and do something just for ourselves, whether it's to actually go to our own doctor's appointments, or it's go to a movie, or it's get somebody to wash our hair, or it's go to a yoga class, whatever it is, it's vitally important, and we can find a way to take an hour or even 20 minutes. I think what's important here is that we don't project too far out. You know, caregivers need to take things in small bites. So think of these respites as 20 minutes at a time. Even if you're stuck visiting somebody in a hospital and you can't leave physically, you can walk around the halls. You can walk up and down the stairs, get a little exercise, get a little oxygen to your brain, move, you know, things like that.
What about hopping on a plane and going to a tropical island for a week?
Well, that's what I say is our fantasy. You know, sometimes there's a chapter on dark thoughts, and one thing caregivers often share is the sense of, I wish I could just get on a plane and fly away, or I wish I could just get in the car and drive away. And we feel tremendous guilt at having those thoughts, because, of course, we shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But yet we do. It's hard work. And we don't need to fly away to an island. We can simply do a little meditation. We can close our eyes and do a little deep breathing. We can watch a sitcom on television or anything that gives us pleasure, and that will be our mental vacation, which helps a lot.
Yeah, and I guess I wasn't really kidding about getting away for a vacation, getting away for even if it's a weekend with the girls. Or, I mean, do you have to? I mean, I suppose it depends on your situation, but it's not like you have to be in town 24/7 in some cases.
It really does depend on your situation. Mm-hmm. For caregivers that can leave, my sister, for example, is in a caregiving situation right now with her husband, and it's fairly new, but she had plans to visit me for a week in California and next month, and so she's thinking of coming, which I encourage her to do, but she's got to make sure that her husband is going to be supervised and cared for while she's gone. It's a big responsibility. So some of it is just making sure that everything is going to be okay while you're gone.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Jane Heller. She is a novelist. She is author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits. Talking about some advice on how you, if you're a caregiver, can care for others, your loved one, get the best care for your loved one without compromising your own health, things that you should also do to take care of yourself. If you're a caregiver, we'd love to hear from you. How do you take care of yourself? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Pam in Douglas County emails, I care for my husband's medical needs and find that taking time to do the things I enjoy and enjoyed prior to his getting sick are vitally important. It is so important for caregivers to do this and remove any guilt that they may feel at taking time for themselves. And guilt seems to come naturally for caregivers. They must remove themselves from their loved ones, even if for a short time, such as for an afternoon, and continue to enjoy whatever personal interests they may have. So, get rid of the guilt, Jane Heller?
Yes. Easier said than done. But yes, yes, yes. That's one of the lessons I learned. I wasn't able to take time for myself, and now I do. Now I... You know, I kiddingly say to my husband, do you really need to go to the emergency room? And if so, is this something where you can take yourself? And I say, if you're not keeled over on the floor, maybe you could take yourself. I mean, I'm joking, but it illustrates that, if I have plans, that are, you know, pre-existing, I'm going to go unless there's something he really needs me for. And that's a change. That's a sea change.
Yeah. So is your husband in remission now? Does it come and go?
It comes and goes. And so he'll have a flare, which means that he'll maybe have an intestinal obstruction, which may or may not require surgery. And sometimes it's a complication from the medication he takes. He's on a very sort of heavy-duty drug that he has infusions every 6 weeks at the hospital. And sometimes there are complications from that. So as I say, he has a knack for knowing when it's a national holiday. His body just says, oh, must be Christmas, let's go to the ER. It's uncanny. But I'm hoping this Christmas we will be saved from that. We'll see.
I hope so, too. We will take a short break, and then we'll take more calls with your own survival tips if you're a caregiver, or questions that you may have for our guest, who is a caregiver as well, Jane Heller. Jane Heller's husband suffers from Crohn's disease, and she was inspired to write this book, You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits, after she began to suffer from some health conditions because she was neglecting her own health in favor of caring for her husband. So she says caregivers need to take care of themselves as they are trying to advocate for their loved ones. So we welcome your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Peggy Post, Emily Post's great-granddaughter-in-law, will join Kathleen to talk about meaningful gift-giving this holiday season. We are talking about caregiving and how caregivers should take care of themselves as well with the author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean in Janesville is with us next. Hi, Sean.
Hey, hello.
Hi. So what is your story?
My story? Oh, well, my grandmother, she had Alzheimer's. It actually hit her in 1997. My father took care of her for 9 years, all the way to 2006. Me, myself, I only took care of her for 3 years, helping out from 2001 to 2004. But what I found, just from personal experience, was hobbies helped a lot. A little bit of meditation and enjoying life was a very important aspect of that.
Well, good for you, Sean, too. Wonderful. I'm glad you called for a number of reasons. And bless you for helping to take care of your grandmother, was it?
Yep. Yeah. Gosh. Still going strong at 96.
Oh, she's still with us. All right.
Yes, she is.
So you're still doing some caregiving, or at least some helping.
Just visitation. Now it's out of our hands at this point.
Oh, I see. She's in a facility.
Correct.
Yeah.
But it's a good facility, and they're good to her. And we had help the last 4 years, too. We actually had an organization that came in, took a few hours helping us out, giving us a break, and that was a godsend. Yeah. That was 100% godsend right there. Because before that, I have no idea how my dad kept himself for 9 years.
Well, thank you so much, Sean, for calling. So help from a home health care organization, apparently, Jane. But I found this interesting for a couple of reasons. First, Sean says, he made sure that he kept up with his hobbies and activities that he enjoyed to do, that was crucial for him to get through this.
Yeah, and many of the caregivers that I interviewed say the same. So if you, there was a man in Florida whose son had ALS and his wife had Parkinson's, and he kept up his biweekly tennis game, very important for him. So hobbies are crucial. So, by the way, is work. It's a conflict, again, with the guilt question about most of us have to work, and yet how do we care and work? Do we care if we work? It's a difficult question, but working is another way for us to distract ourselves, to stop thinking 24/7 about our, caregiving. And so if work is a source of pleasure, absolutely do that. There are lots and lots of ways, but follow whatever it is. If it's taking walks, if it's skiing, if it's yoga, reading was another thing that people did a lot of. Just do whatever. Keep your book group. Do whatever you can.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting. You just mentioned though a story of another man who is taking care of not his wife and his son, apparently. But here we have a grandson who apparently did quite a bit in caring for his own grandmother and his father as well for years and years. I often think of the caregiver more often than not as the woman in the family.
Well, and that's changing. It mm-hmm. used to be so. It used to be, and women still make up the majority of caregiving if you look at the statistics, but that's changing. And what's also interesting is there's a stereotype of the older woman who is the caregiver. A lot of young people are caregivers too, whether it's a grandparent or a favorite, aunt or a neighbor. They're pitching in ways that we didn't see before. That said, families are scattered around these days, and sometimes it's your friends that are your family. Your siblings may be across the country or maybe living in another country. So families, the definition of family is changing all the time, and but we do see different models for who the caregiver is.
Again, thank you to Sean. Now we go to Jane in Manitouish Waters. Hello, Jane.
Hi, Joy and guest. I have a slightly different situation. I am one of like two to four very near family members to a caregiving situation. My sister has stage 4 stomach cancer, and her daughter is a nurse, and she happened to be taking a respite from her work due to her own personal situation, and so she became the caregiver. However, that daughter, my niece, is suffering from anorexia right now, and so I see that she's, everything is concentrated around my sister because she seems so terminal. But I am really concerned about the stress on my niece who, the rest of the family's in denial about her. So,
yeah, so what is there any advice you might have for
yes.
Jane?
Yes, yes, Jane. Yes, yes. One of the caregivers that I interviewed is a woman named Harriet Brown, who wrote a wonderful book called Brave Girl Eating. And her situation was that her daughter was anorexic. And all the denial that went into that, it was very, very interesting. And the advice that she gives is tremendous. I urge you to see her, you know, to check out her book and read what she has to say about caregiving a daughter who is anorexic. That is not to be taken lightly. That is a complicated chronic illness. And just as crucial as any of the others that we're talking about today. So I'm sorry that you're going through all of this. It sounds very difficult, but you're very bright to jump on this because it's important.
Thank you very much, Jane, for the call, and good luck to you. Harriet Brown is formerly from Wisconsin, and we've talked to her on this show about her story and anorexia and also body image issues. Let's see. We have an email from Roxanne in Milwaukee. My mother is caring for my dad, who has Alzheimer's disease. I have found that one thing she needs from me and her friends is good conversation. Dad was always her conversation partner. They discussed current events, family matters, and so forth, and now that's no longer possible. So I try to talk to Mom about politics, religion, current events, books, and so forth to keep her mind engaged.
Oh, I love that. That is wonderful to, number one, just be able to sense that was a missing piece, mm-hmm. That needed to be filled. That's terrific. We don't want to be just about caregiving. We have other lives, you know, other parts of our lives, other parts of ourselves that need nourishing too. So, yes, please engage your caregiver, friends, family, in conversation about the real world as opposed to just the caregiving world.
Next we go to Jim in Wanakee. Hello, Jim.
Well, good morning, and thank you for this important program, and thank you for your service in informing the public about this very, very needed information.
Well, you're very welcome, Jim. Do you have
something that I'd like to make a point about, and that is with the eroding safety net for people, you know, not only for people caring for the elderly, but caring for children. I've been really passionately moved by some of these cases where these single moms who have to work outside of the homes, they aren't maybe aware of resources that are there, or maybe they don't have resources. There may be no family to take care of the children while they work to support the children. But I know there's been several cases in Wisconsin where, out of desperation, the single mom has the boyfriend take care of the small child, and the baby messes his pants and
right. And I, Jim, yeah. I'm afraid I know what you're saying, but maybe all caregivers need to know the resources that are available.
Well, yeah,
to them.
Exactly right. But what I'm saying is that is there a way? What advice do you have in terms of helping people become aware? I mean, you're doing this now, that there are places like here in Dane County, we're rather blessed. We have a place called the Center for Families for Vulnerable Children.
Thank you very much, Jim. I'm afraid we're kind of getting off into a different topic. But Jane, what advice do you have so caregivers know what resources are available to them?
Well, yes. I mean, the important thing is, for example, not just for children and daycare, but there are, in many communities, adult daycare centers where here in Santa Barbara, California, we have the Friendship Center, for example, where working single mothers, single women, single men can drop off their parent with dementia, for example. It's a terrific place. They send a bus to all parts of the county and pick somebody up, you know, first thing in the morning and till 5 in the evening, so that person can have a day's work without worrying. There are a lot of good facilities. You have to tap into your local community to see, you know, what they are. And I don't know what they are in Wisconsin, but that's, it's a good point. Certainly it is.
Yeah. And sometimes the caregiver is a, maybe the caregiver is a single mom who has kids, but is also taking care of her mom or grandma. And right. So you have this multi-generational thing going on.
Well, and they've termed it the sandwich generation, mm-hmm. Because you're caught in the middle between taking care of the parent and your children.
Yeah.
And that makes it that much harder to find that 20 minutes or an hour for yourself. But it must be done.
Yeah, and when your guide, though, and when we're talking about a caregiver, it is generally an adult who's caring for a loved one or family member, not so much a parent taking care of a child.
No, it's true, but mm-hmm. but there are times when the caregiving goes both ways. So,
right.
For example, one of the caregivers I interviewed who has the autistic son also had a husband who was dying of cancer, and Linda Dano, who was a soap opera actress, is interviewed in the book. She was caring for a husband with cancer and a dad with Alzheimer's. So sometimes it's multiple hits, mm-hmm. you know, and they, you have to juggle.
Hans in Shorewood is with us now. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I do home hemodialysis for my wife, which what? Not too many people do.
No, I don't even know if I heard that correctly.
Okay, it's like going to a dialysis center, but I'm the technician, I'm the nurse, I'm everything. My wife's an amputee. I give her dialysis 6 days a week, basically for me, 5 hours a day. I don't have any insurance.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm 52 years old. I have to be the administrator. I have to be the housekeeper. I have to make sure everything is run smooth. And it's a really tough job.
I was saying, did you need special medical training, or have you been medically trained, Hans, to do that?
5 weeks. Five weeks at a center, 5 days, and I learned it in 3 weeks because I didn't like school to begin with, so I learned it real quick.
Well, Hans, bless you, too. I mean, that's got to be overwhelming, Jane.
Well, and what an act of love and devotion. I mean, that's tremendous. I can only tip my hat and say that's pretty wonderful. But Hans, what are you doing to take time for yourself in the middle of all this?
I drink too much, and that's what I want to tell. And that's what I want to tell other caregivers, because it's really easy to escape into alcohol.
I'm so glad you brought mm-hmm. that up. I really am, because I do cover that in the book. It is not only easy to self-medicate, which is essentially what we're doing, but there are prescription drugs in our loved one's medicine cabinet. It's very easy to just say, I think I'll take that pill that mom or dad or my husband is taking, make me feel better. And when I refill the prescription at the pharmacist, I'll just say, oh, you know, dad didn't realize and took an extra. There is a real problem of substance abuse among caregivers, and what we have to do is realize, okay, a glass of wine at the end of the day is very relaxing, but finishing that bottle is escaping into an addiction that is not helpful.
No.
So we need to get that in check so that we can care for the person that we love.
Well, I do. This has been really interesting. And Jane, I hope that your holidays, your Christmas is a merry one, and that you're not going to be in the ER, as you say you often are during a holiday.
Thank you, Joy.
Thanks very much for being with us. Jane Heller is a novelist, author of You'd Better Not Die or I'll Kill You, A Caregiver's Survival Guide to Keeping You in Good Health and Good Spirits. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster, who produced and directed this show. Thanks to Rob Ferret for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.